This week on the Inside Flap.
Santa Claus comes out and there's really painful shtick. Really, really bad. Like, awful. I feel embarrassed to be sitting there.
Oh, where's Mrs. Claus?
So three attractive 30-somethings get up and start, no joke, running to the door.
They ran for the exits.
Yeah. No, why did they run for the exits?
Because they couldn't take it anymore.
Couldn't take it.
Because they were smart. Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the room, to my slight right, is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the couch, right on the other side of Nelson the dog, that's Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
I feel like you have a little something.
Something going on there.
Maybe. I mean, I feel fine. I'm drained. I'm just drained.
Okay. While you're being drained, try to make sure to keep that microphone right up to the mouth. There you go.
Roger.
Welcome to the show. This is episode 236 of
The Inside Flap,
book podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We are pleased to have you with us. This will be our last show of 2023.
Woohoo! Just kidding.
And once again, wow. We are guest-free. We have a lot of guests lined up for next year, but for some reason, it's always hard to get bookings at the end of December.
No, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, people are busy. They're traveling. Mm. They're doing a lot of stuff.
A lot of books come out this time of year.
Well, yeah, and I feel they come out before Christmas to get them, but like right around, no books are, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot of books coming around. And we don't, a little peek behind the curtain for you, we don't just book a guest just to have them on the show. I mean, we vet them and pick and choose who we want to have on. So that's how we roll. So didn't see anybody worthy of coming on this week.
Oh,
I guess is my point. No. I don't know what my point is. I mean, I get these emails months in advance.
Oh, so we book our guests.
Like we literally, I just booked an author, Mary Kubica.
Yeah.
Mary Kubica. Is that how she's pronounced?
I don't know how it's pronounced.
I booked an author for April just today. So that's the way it goes. Way, way, way out in advance. But we do have book recommendations for you. And of course,
the audio book of the week.
But before we get to that, but first, I want to tell you about my day. So, you know, I'm blessed. I am hashtag blessed that I don't have to go to work for a couple of weeks. My last day was last Thursday. Mary Medicus came in for a little trip. It was good to see my mom. She came up here, spent a few days with us. And then today, beautiful day outside. You know what I said? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go up into the foothills. I'm going to take a hike.
It was a really nice day.
Taking a hike, yes. It was actually in this. Actually, my truck read driving back. Well, I'll get to that in a second. But my thermometer on my truck read 70 degrees.
Wow.
So it must have hit 70. Huh. But went up to Conifer, and if you go to Conifer, there's a road, a Pine Junction Road. You go down that road, you go past Pine towards Deckers, and there's some beautiful hikes in there. I went to Cheeseman Canyon, took some lovely pictures. I'll put them on our Facebook page. One of my favorite places to go hike. It's undiscovered except by about 25 fishermen. And there's always a bunch of fishermen in the creek, but I never see any hikers there. So I'm going there. So drove up the road there to Conifer, took a left-hand turn down the twisty, narrow road that winds down the canyon and ends in this little valley there, or big valley there. About halfway down the twisty, windy road, my car starts beeping, and then I get some flashing lights, and then it says, no power steering. And my car goes from the nice power steering on this twisty road to all of a sudden manual steering. And I don't know, like, I remember when You know, I had
remember that too.
Well, it was, this was so hard
was
to
it?
Opt to steer this truck on these winding roads. And when I got into the parking lot,
did you use both hands? Were you using
both? Had to in the parking lot. I had to use both
hands. You should be driving with both hands. What am I saying?
But is that I was not able to drive with my knee. But is that the way it used to be before power steering? I remember I had a car that did not have power steering, but I feel
was
like
it a truck though?
It was not a truck, no. But this truck today, my Chevy Colorado, was so hard to steer. And it's not like I was going to drive, turn around and drive back home. At that point, I'm 20 minutes away from the hike. I'm an hour away from home. I'm out of cell phone service. I'm just going to go down and get my hike on.
So back before power steering, the steering wheels would be twice the size. So you'd have more leverage.
Okay, yeah, more leverage.
The steering mechanism... There wasn't much suspension. Everything was a lot lighter. So it was a lot easier to steer prior to power steering. But now that you've got power steering, they've got all kinds of suspension. All the parts are bigger and heavier. The tires are bigger and heavier.
That makes sense.
All right, now we're making
I thought Andrew would know.
No,
I certainly have no idea.
And they make the steering wheel smaller.
Check out the big brain on
Go jump in an old car, like a 50s automobile or something like that. And you won't believe the size of the steering wheel.
You know, now you say that, the guy down the street has got like an old 57 Chevy.
He's got some beautiful cars.
And it does have a big old steering wheel, big steering wheel on it.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, that makes a lot of sense. Well, the car seemed fine. I was able to drive it, got to the parking lot, almost dislocated my shoulder, pulling into a spot. Finally was able to do so. Hiking along the canyon, and I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go up the canyon, and this is not a sheer canyon wall. It's not like sheer granite canyon walls. They're you know, angled, and there's areas where there's a lot of trees, so you can hike up, and it's about 1,000 feet from the riverbed to the top of the canyon. So I'm gonna scamper up this canyon, get some views. So I scamper up, and I get to.
Was it snowy up there? Was it snow covered?
There were a little bit here and there, mostly on the the north face. Which would be a good name for a winter clothing
company.
Interesting,
would be a great name.
We've talked about that before. It would be a great name. File that away. I may need to edit out this part of the podcast so I can
trademark
the company. Yeah, but I had my spikes. I had Exo spikes I could strap onto my shoes for any areas where I needed better footing. But no, for the most part, it was not. It was not. So I get up to the top. I go to the top of Cheeseman Mountain. Beautiful 360-degree views from there. And then it's like, well, I can go all the way back down to the river and then follow the river out. Or I'm so high up, I literally can see the parking lot. And it's 2 miles away, but I can see it from as high up as I am. So I can either go back to the river, skirt all the way around, or go straight down the north face.
I'm so glad I wasn't with you.
Side of this. And now that was snow covered. Mm-hmm. I said, all right, let me just give this a try. It'll be an adventure. We'll bushwhack. And I had to bushwhack my way up. Might as well, my legs are already cut up. Let me bushwhack my way down. So I strapped on the Exo spikes. I started going down. And this is probably like 45 degrees. It is steep. And what I'm doing is there's so many trees, I can like take 2 steps and my momentum will get built up. But I can just stop myself by landing on a tree. But I'm just, with my arms, holding my arms out, stopping myself. I'm like a pinball going down, ding, 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 from tree to tree to tree. And then it got a little less deep, and I saw some tracks.
Do you still carry the survival if you had to spend the night outside? Do you still have that in your backpack?
Yeah, of course. Okay, absolutely. Good. Yeah.
I got worried, Andrew, like something would happen.
Right.
Lost or hurt or something, and he'd have to spend the night outside. Mm-hmm. So I got him like a drinking straw. And then I think a little sleeping sack.
Hmm. Right. And
what do they call them? Bivy sacks or something? I don't know.
Bivouac sacks.
Bivouac.
I don't know how it's
pronounced. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and also I got like a 3-story mansion on my back. It's just nice. I'm just crammed in it. Like a Richie Rich.
Are you telling me you don't have that in your
backpack
anymore?
I got all that stuff. I got all that stuff.
So hang on here.
Yeah.
So Laura, where are you on the believability in terms of whether he's actually...
I'm thinking he doesn't have anything in there.
I'm thinking probably not.
He's got
I forgot to put it in there this morning.
I think you need to keep those in
don't
know.
In the summertime.
The fishermen are in the water 2 miles below you.
Right. So I'm going down, and I see some tracks. I'm like, oh, someone else has been here, and they've found a good route down to the parking lot. I'll follow their tracks. So I start following the tracks, and then I look down at these tracks.
Yeah.
And I notice they're not people tracks.
Oh, what are they?
Well, I thought, and I had to look it up when I got home, I was sure that these were...
Can we see a picture?
These were mountain lion tracks.
If you see the claw, it's not a big cat.
Right, and that's what I just found out. I saw the claw.
Because they do not walk with their claws out.
Because there were claws in these prints. So it looks like it could have been a kite when I got home. I did not take a picture of the tracks in the snow. I wish
I had.
It's
a canine or something.
But it could be a dog. It could also be a coyote. Because you can see the...
They just reintroduced gray wolves. They just dropped them in.
Gray wolf. Oh, yeah.
Maybe there's a fella there.
So then, so I was kind of freaked out about that. I'm going down. I got my head. My head is on a swivel. And then I hear, off in the distance, thankfully, but close enough to like raise my hackles.
What did you hear?
A shotgun blast.
Oh.
It's shotgun blast.
Hunting season.
Yeah. And I'm on the other side of the ridge from where the fishermen are in the canyon, because I've gone up and over the mountain. I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm thinking, great.
They do steer clear. If they're a smart hunter, they steer clear of the hiking paths.
Sure, yeah. You don't want to be...
But you're not on a hiking path.
You don't want to pull a Dick Cheney, as we like to say.
Oh.
Now, we went hiking one time in maybe Golden State Park or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Golden Gate Canyon Golden Gate State Canyon. Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so basically... And we were there for a company outing.
Beautiful park.
Yeah.
And so it was like, hunting season. Well, there's a guy carrying an assault rifle.
Oh, come on.
And this guy is basically spraying bullets all over the frickin' place. You've got people hiking.
What?
You got people hiking all over.
No.
Yeah.
Did you report him?
We did. I mean, we talked to the ranger, but it's like, unfortunately, weird. I mean, some people just like aren't responsible. He was probably a 20-some-year-old kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's like...
Well, that's something different. That's a psychopath out in the woods.
Yeah, it's like...
I heard just shotgun blasts.
Yeah.
Clearly hunting.
How many?
It was like every 10 for a good 5 minutes, like every 15, 20 seconds.
That's a lot, Dave.
Blast. Yeah.
So they're reloading?
I guess. I don't know.
So I don't know.
I don't know.
So I don't know what they've been... So the thing is, if you're hunting waterfowl, you'd use a shotgun. And there might be multiple blasts when you shoot that, but... Like there being a series, so I like. But,
right. No,
but,
this was just booms every once in a while.
Yeah.
Maybe they're doing target practice. Mm. But it wasn't assault rifle or anything like that. It sounded like a shotgun blast to me. Why? I'm not. I don't know my gunfire sound effects, but that freaked me out. And then get back in my truck and have to deal with the manual steering. Then get up to Conifer, pull over when I got cell service and did a little reading and found out that there is no power steering fluid. In a 2016 Chevy Colorado, it's electric. And then got back in my truck, started it up, and it was fine all the way down. But I, drove to the mechanics. We'll see.
What's going on. I'd be getting in there, checking the wires and checking the connections. It could just be in a loose connection.
That's what I was hoping for. Yeah.
Hopefully it's not that the power steering mechanism needs to be replaced. How much does it cost for a new... power steering mechanism for...
We're not going to go there. I'm not going to look that
up. Maybe we'll
be
getting a new EV truck.
Yeah, sure. Laura, how has your week been?
Oh, it's been good. So we went to a concert Saturday night.
Right.
The Denver Brass Band concert.
Yes, because somebody won a costume contest, as we described last week, at the Denver Brass Fest, and got two free ducats to the Denver Brass Ensemble show.
Yeah.
Held on the Denver Metro campus.
Metro State University in Denver. And it's right next to Ball Arena where the Nuggets play. And we had dropped your mom off at the airport, came around, got in with plenty of time, sat down. What do you think, two-thirds full?
When we got there, it was about one-third full. We were a little early, though. It got up to two-thirds full. But the tip-off for me was when we walked into this concert hall, and it's... I mean, the size of a big lecture hall, really. It's not a huge arena or anything like that. A couple thousand people, it looks like you could hold. And I walk in there, and I see something I had not seen for years. Saw a man sitting down, waiting the concert. We're 20 minutes before the concert.
I don't think I know what you're going to say.
The guy must have been in his 80s. He had a newspaper. He had old newspaper.
Yeah, I did not see that.
Yeah, and I was like, "Whoa, have we stepped back in time? What is going on? I can't remember the last time I went to a public place. And so, I mean, even on the subways, we went back to New York, you don't see that anymore.
We are middle-aged.
Saw a man reading a newspaper.
We are middle-aged and we were younger.
Yeah.
But that's typical of any time you go to the symphony or any time, anything like that. Mm-hmm.
Something like
that. But
it was indicative of the age of the concert.
It was supposed to start at 7. And the first sign, again, another sign that it wasn't going to go quite as well is like, they didn't hit the stage until what, 10 after?
11 after. 11 minutes after, yes.
And so they started playing. It was great.
Not the Rolling Stones, Andrew. Not the Rolling Stones. A brass ensemble. A Denver local brass ensemble.
They sound absolutely fantastic.
They sound great, yes.
They have killer people, you know, musicians that are up there. Just amazing musicians. Hmm. The trumpet, this one guy on the trumpet. Just like my heart went pitter-patter for the sound of that trumpet.
The horse sound on Sleigh Ride, it was absolutely, you would have sworn there was a live horse on
the stage. They sounded great. So then the second song comes on, and then we've got a, maybe the third, I don't know. But this woman comes on stage. Celebrity she most resembles is Meryl Streep.
Yes.
And she says, hi, I'm, you know, the founder. And I've been told I have to pad because we have a large.
Okay, but you're not doing her justice. You need to do an impression of her.
I'm not going to do an impression of her. I feel bad about
it. This is what this woman. Hi, I'm the founder of the Denver. How am I doing?
Pretty good.
Okay, thank you. And this was her cadence and the way
she looked like Meryl Streep.
Talked.
Sounded like emo Phillips.
Was not.
Like emo Phillips.
Meryl Streep.
Yes.
And so she's like, hey, I've been called out here to pad because we have audience members that are late.
This is the who you want padding.
And so I'm thinking, I've never had anyone pad to let a few people, not a lot.
There were like seven stragglers who came in.
Come in. And then she's like, oh, you know, the traffic in Denver, it's just terrible. And it's like, the traffic's always bad. It's been bad in this city for the last 10 years.
Hello,
like,
there's a Nuggets game right next door.
Yeah. What kind of traffic we're going to get.
Right.
Like, it's not LA traffic. It's not Atlanta. It's not Dallas.
Well, this campus is easy to get to.
It's very, thank right you, Andrew. It's right off the highway.
It's 500 feet off the highway.
It's right off the highway. And the highway wasn't backed up. There wasn't an accident. It was just traffic.
And she's just going on and on. I got a speeding ticket
right there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. You did.
Yep. She's just going on. It's a great band, and we just love our brass.
And so I thought,
musicians.
Okay, we'll get through this gal, and then we're going to enjoy the rest of the concert.
But she's talking to us like we're kindergartners.
True, that's true.
That is no lie.
But at the same time, in my head, I'm like, all right, whatever. She has to pad. She's not a good speaker. They sent her out. They didn't know who to send out.
Right.
I'm going to be okay as a person. I'm going to live through this concert.
We're going to persevere.
Because she's going to go away.
Right. And we're going to get to the music. Yeah.
She knows she's not a good speaker.
Yeah. She's got to know.
Now, do you think somebody backstage that knows her...
Mm-hmm.
Somebody or somebodies are laughing their asses off because she's
I wish.
There. Yeah.
I wish. And in my head, I was like, oh, I feel bad for this woman because she's clearly not meant to be public speaking.
Right.
Then, Andrew, the next song comes on. Then after that song ends, great song, who comes out again but Meryl Streep?
Here she comes.
And
Here's
Meryl Streep comes out. And she tells like a 4 or 5 minute long story that doesn't make a lot of sense.
No sense at all.
And it's not funny. It's awkward. It's awkward.
Yeah.
And then I realized, she's the MC.
She's got all.
She's coming
thing.
Out in between every single.
She's
song.
Like she's like Jerry Lewis during the telethon.
Oh boy!
Every
padding,
single song.
Padding, padding.
Was she asking for donations?
She did.
There's
towards
some of
the
that.
End. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Absolutely. Some of that. Yeah.
But the thing is, I kind of wish she had just let the band leader. He actually told an interesting story in front of. He introduced one song, and his story was short. It was about the little kind of slow song that they had, but he said it's from 1609,
right?
You know, and he explained it, and it made me kind of more enjoy the song more,
right?
And it was short and interesting. Nothing that she said
the
was
opposite of what she was.
She's up there
long,
Andrew,
and boring.
She's quoting from Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus. Then at one point, she's starting to quote lines from The Grinch. Like, it's all stuff like we don't need to be quoted. Let's just give us the song.
There were three interludes where she's quoting from Yes, Virginia, There's a Santa Claus. And then they schlep Santa out there.
That movie, I think, is from 1939. I'm thinking it is.
Which more relevant than today.
Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. But,
right? But, you don't know because it's way before you were born.
If it's like the Judy Garland, Meet Me in St. Louis era, probably.
Well, yes. And what? How about when she came out and she said, this next song is Frosty the Snowman. Now, this song, and the conductor starts shaking his head.
Oh, yeah.
And I look at my program, and I'm like, this next song is not Frosty the Snowman. So he's like, it's not the next song. So she looks up, and she just looks at us, and she just waves goodbye and starts walking off the stage. And meanwhile, did you hear the guy to our right? He starts laughing.
He loved it.
Like she was Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. The old
guy. What are you laughing at? Oh, this is a disaster. Yeah. Hey, he's losing his mind over it.
Hey, did, can you keep it down? You're disturbing Nelson here. He's trying to rest.
I couldn't get over it.
I guess there's been a lot of movies, and the latest movie is from 1991, which I did not see.
Well, no, there was an old black and white one.
There's also one from 1974, but the actual story comes from 1897.
Yeah. So that's how relevant she is. Was spending four songs talking about it. And then how about when Santa Claus came out and there was that shtick between them?
So Santa came out and then there were some attractive, I'm going to say 30-somethings that were towards the front. Santa Claus comes out and there's really painful shtick, really, really bad. Like, awful. I feel embarrassed to be sitting there.
Oh, where's Mrs. Claus?
So three attractive 30-somethings get up and start, no joke, running to the door.
They ran for the exits.
Yeah. No, why did they run for the exits?
Because they couldn't take it anymore.
Couldn't take it.
Because they were smart. They were smart.
The thing is, the music's fantastic. Just play the music.
Yeah, play to your strengths.
That's what I'm there to hear.
It's not a kids' concert. There's no reason to have Santa, and Santa conducted the band for a whole song.
That was cute.
Okay, I guess.
I thought that was
cute. That was fine because he's dancing around. That was fine.
I thought that was
cute. But you don't need to come out and do Santa shtick.
Oh, no, you don't need to do that.
Oh, when's your day? When's your day off, Santa? So it was terrible.
So, I mean, I'm not a big music aficionado, but the thing with music and like jazz is you get into it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And you get into it.
Well, yes.
The problem with this is like throwing a bucket of cold water on
you. Every time.
You know what? I hadn't thought about
momentum.
It that way.
Great point.
That was it, exactly.
You can't build up a head of steam.
I will say I'm doing something right in life because I have heard Sleigh Ride, the song Sleigh Ride, done three times live by live bands.
Yes.
Before Christmas, and it doesn't get any better than that. That is a fantastic song to hear live.
Great song to hear live.
You want to hear Dashiell's version on clarinet?
I hear it.
And luckily, there was an intermission, so we didn't have to do the mad dash up the aisles to leave early. And we did. We looked at each other. We said, really like to hear the music. Really can't stand listening to this woman.
We would have been there another hour because of that.
It would have been a whole another hour.
Yeah.
And why do French horn players have to stick their fists up the bell of their instruments?
I wondered if their fists got... So they sit there, Andrew, they play the French horn and they have their hand inside the bell.
No, I always knew they did this.
Does
their
hand
never
get
understood
wet?
Why.
I bet their hand gets wet.
Well, you got spit running out unless they got to empty their spit valve.
I don't know. I wondered that too. They sounded great. I don't know. Dave doesn't care for the French horn, evidently.
I'm not a huge fan.
I thought they sounded
beautiful.
As
a trombone player, I'm a big fan of the trombone. I will put up with a trumpet.
The trumpet sounded gorgeous.
Amazing trumpet.
I did
players.
See the drummer in that band yawn, though. So
that's right. He yawned in the middle of the concert.
So, Andrew, how have you been?
So the usual busy. It is a busy time of the year.
Sure is.
Now, last week, about a week ago, today or yesterday, I'm in my office working, and I hear Katie, right? And we moved into this new neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, probably some of the nicest nicest houses around. Our neighbors are all doctors, you know, lawyers. I mean, you know, like, you know, it's a pretty well-to-do neighborhood. So there's a house across the street from us. It's across the street and two houses down, and we have like the perfect view, like out of our kitchen windows, like, you know, we can see this house is maybe 150 feet away, right?
Stalker much?
Yeah. So anyways, I'm in the office working and Katie's like, there's a whole bunch of police out front.
Oh.
And I've heard her say before, oh, there's a police car out front or something like that. So I don't think it even. She's like, you know, it's a SWAT team. And then it just keeps building and it keeps building.
Wow.
Well, there's unmarked cars. So I go out the window and I look.
It leaps out the window.
Yeah, I go to the window and look. So anyways, so it turns out there's an FBI raid.
What?
On this house, right? No joke. And you know,
I'm fascinated.
And you know,
by
it's
this.
FBI because they've got the vests that say
it says FBI
on it.
You are kidding me.
That's crazy.
You've got men. You've got women.
Wow.
Men and women.
You could tell.
Imagine that.
Wow.
2023.
Men and women.
It's 2023.
Come on. There's no way there were women.
You can tell that they all have different specialties.
Stop it.
Like they're all doing something slightly different.
Just kidding.
There are the people in the full like assault gear with with automatic weapons.
But then there were like commanders or whatever.
Oh yeah. And like I said, you can see like the organization. I mean, they show up in unmarked cars, like crappy little Hondas. You know, crappy little Toyotas.
Wow.
I mean, these guys, you know, were
if
under...
If the FBI is involved, that's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. And so...
Was there an LAPD officer telling the FBI guys that they were shooting at the lights?
Yeah, no.
It's a diehard joke.
Shooting at the
lights.
Yeah. So, shooting at the lights. You know, and it's nice weather. So Katie, like, she's watching this, and I've got to work.
I would have been mouth agape with her.
But I can hear her play-by-play.
Sure.
Now, have the neighbors starting to crowd around... Are they outside looking?
You would stay inside if you see that.
I guess with FBI,
you are
you
not
stay
going
away.
Out.
You
when there
away.
Are guns involved, That's you're not true. Going out of I mean, that house.
You know some serious, you know, crapola is going down.
Yeah.
Right? They're obviously, like, serving a search warrant and who knows what else. I mean, they have the whole area, like, controlled.
Wow.
I mean, they've got cars parked in front of our house. I mean, it is just organized mayhem.
Is this the middle of the day?
It started in the morning.
A lot of these cops also leave the lights flashing. Do they leave? Were all the lights flashing?
There,
in the
there weren't any lights flashing.
It's not cops, Dave.
This
it's
is
the
under,
FBI.
Undercover FBI. No, like, and thing is,
no cops.
I think they waited for the kids to get off to school.
Oh,
so there wouldn't be any
that
kids
makes sense.
Caused. But it's basically as soon as like the school buses and stuff were gone,
they pull in.
I mean, they were
wow.
They were on it. And I don't know if that factors into their timing, but I think they waited for people to leave because like the house next to us.
That makes sense.
Their kids go to daycare.
Did they come screaming up, or was it, just Katie just saw
and so I didn't
notice the cars?
I don't know if she
there.
Actually saw, like...
I bet they came in fast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're unmarked cars.
Yeah.
Coming in hot.
You know, come in fast.
Next thing you know, I mean...
So tell me what happened.
So they took a lot of stuff out of the house. At one point...
Did you see any person that was in the home?
Their
homeowner?
So at one point, people came home that lived there.
Whoa!
Now
are they like walking out with Picasso paintings. What are they taking out of the house?
What I will say is, these neighbors, like in this affluent community, they drove the most expensive cars with brand new tags. One was
you notice how Andrew had to say
drug
it
dealers
was in the affluent community.
So I don't know. So basically,
but what were they carrying out of the house?
Well, yeah. So boxes of papers, boxes of stuff. Who knows?
Oh, maybe that's where Trump's Russia binder went.
And so
we know.
And so as far as the cars, the one is a G-Wagon, but not just any G-Wagon.
What's a G-Wagon?
A Mercedes G-Wagon.
Okay.
Look it up.
Okay.
Look up.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Look up
look up
a 2024 special edition Mercedes G-Wagon.
Okay.
Look to see what the top price is. So it's like a $300,000 vehicle.
Whoa.
I thought you had to look it up.
I think it's like a $300,000 vehicle. I mean, we're talking like... we're talking obnoxious.
Yeah, $205,000.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's without extras.
There is one for $439,000.
Yeah, and that's probably what they were driving.
Mm.
Like a special edition one.
Boy, those are not... Oh, I've seen these cars on the road.
Yeah, they are expensive.
They look like a Land Rover a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And then they have another AMG, but they searched. So people actually came home in like one of those vehicles. And they have some younger people living in the house. Like I never saw...
So people came home. Did the cops... Cuff them? Did the FBI cuff them?
So it was interesting because we watched them, and Katie's like, they're arriving home. And I think it was one of the younger people that lived in the house. And I don't know if they're kids or relatives or what.
When you say younger people, how old?
Like 20s?
20-something.
Okay.
I'm thinking when he says that, he means 20s.
So you got the FBI everywhere.
Hackers.
I think it's a young woman driving the truck.
Anonymous.
She pulls right into the garage.
With her G-Wagon.
Like she owns the place.
Well, she probably does.
She the whistleblower?
Well, I don't think so. With the FBI there, right? And so basically she's in the car. They keep her in the car. They're talking to her for a long time.
Wow.
Before they let her get out of the car. Then they search the vehicles. Then they basically call tow trucks because they're impounding the vehicles.
Whoa.
So
now what was this woman doing? Was she crying? Was she distressed? I wonder.
They didn't look happy.
Let's get Katie on the line. Just kidding.
That's for sure. They did not look happy at all. But
you have done something very bad if the FBI is after you.
So, and clearly they had warrants, so they're definite probable cause for.
So the husband and wife, and the husband and wife basically, we never saw them. It could be that they've already been arrested, and they have they operate a business or something too. So we have no idea.
Racketeering.
And we had somebody in the community, like one of the persons in the community was there, like he works there. Mm-hmm. And he approached the FBI and he was like talking to them. And I texted him. I'm like, so what's the deal? He's like, well, they won't say much other than these people have something very expensive that doesn't belong to them. And that's all that they would tell him. And, you know.
The Russia binder.
Yeah.
Well, it's good. It has to be a federal crime.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And I would have expected.
Like, I mean, it could be classified docs.
And who knows? But all I can tell you is this is something I would have expected in the news or whatever.
Have you Googled?
I have.
Nothing.
Not a word. I have absolutely not found out about anything. And it could be.
Someone's Googling, what should I do when FBI agents show up at my house?
Yeah.
Someone Googled that? That's a top Google?
Yeah.
It's funny. But in any case,
let them in.
run in the opposite direction.
No, it says don't let them in.
Yeah.
It does?
Yeah.
Well, if they have a warrant, don't you? I mean.
Well, if they have a warrant, yeah. Oh,
and so Katie, she pulled up one of our bar chairs to the window.
To sit and watch.
And was sitting there with a pair of binoculars.
Poured herself a cup of tea.
Honestly, like, I would have done the same thing.
Watching this all go on. I mean, you know. And
well, it's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
And I was sitting there thinking, you know, these guys have got guns and everything. Do you really want to be...
If it's the cops, I might not, because it's local police. But if it's the FBI, I'm all in.
Absolutely. Yeah,
these guys knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
I mean, did not look like a bunch of yahoos running around with weapons.
I wonder what it was.
And that's the thing is we...
You got to get to the bottom of
this. We don't know. And we figure eventually we'll hear something.
I think you'll hear something
neighbors. Take a tray of Christmas cookies over to the house.
Has anyone been at the house since? Have you seen lights on?
So we do, but basically, like, the young women that live there.
Young women?
Right? Is it like a harem?
So I haven't seen.
What are things weird going on there?
The problem is, they're always somewhat secretive, these people.
Okay, another question.
Yep.
Are they attractive?
I wouldn't say so.
Russian spies? No.
Not in, like, typical.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think they're
not like a prostitute, right?
And I think they're more Persian.
You're thinking like an upscale.
Persian.
Yeah, I think it.
No, I was thinking spies. Attractive spies. Well,
double agents.
I'm thinking full Hollywood, okay, Dave. Hollywood. Stay with me here.
But the older man and the older women that live there, right, probably in their 50s, I haven't seen them for some time. Right?
Oh, I wonder if they went missing.
And so, well, that's the question. But they may have actually, like, if they had a business, they may have actually
split
them, and they may have already grabbed them, and that this was an action after the fact.
What would be federal? I don't know.
Just no idea. Somebody told me that there was some jewelry thieves that stole like $500 million worth of jewelry in Boulder.
Wow.
Right? And I don't know.
Does the FBI get involved when it's that big of an amount?
I don't know when they get involved. Like when do they get involved versus, you know, when don't they get involved? But, you know, so if I find out something, like,
you
eventually we will, we'll let you know. But
good gossip.
But that's the big question is we really don't know.
Look at you, Andrew. Something big going on.
We really don't know what they were guilty of. And, you know, this is a nice, affluent neighborhood.
It's not a blue-collar dump like ours.
I know. You notice how many times Andrew said he lives in an affluent neighborhood.
I get what you're saying.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to paint the picture.
I understand, though.
Yeah.
No, I get you. But they're the ones who are more likely to do the white-collar crimes.
Yeah. I mean,
our neighborhood's more like drug or alcohol, DUI, something like that.
And this family was... Like, they were flashing cash like nobody's business.
Wow.
Just in terms of, they bought a brand new house.
Oh, and then
the cars.
G car.
They had people in there working on stuff nonstop. It's a brand new house. And they had contractors, I mean, basically in and out of there. And they were they were private. I went and knocked on their door one time. Despite knowing that somebody was home, nobody answered.
Oh.
Hmm.
So.
Well, that's nothing new.
Yeah.
I don't answer the door when people knock.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of times I won't either, but you think they would have realized it was a neighbor.
They have no interest.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Because they're up to no good.
It's hard to say, and
I wonder what kind of security system. Do they have dogs or anything?
Nope.
Huh.
But they did have, like, cameras outside.
Hmm.
And I can tell you, one of the first things the FBI did was they put bags over their Ring cameras and everything. They covered them up.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, you think for security, if somebody's planning to do something, they could watch the FBI watching them on the cameras.
Oh.
Mm,
that's true.
So for security purposes, but
that's interesting.
You're right.
One of the first things they did
is
they covered up those cameras.
That's interesting.
You would think they just take a piece of tape to it.
They'd like little bags that they put over them.
That's so interesting.
So there was $475,000 worth of jewelry stolen from a Boulder home, but they arrested the guy when the guy went to try to pawn the diamond.
Oh, he didn't know what he had.
So it's not millions.
$475,000.
Yeah. So it's not that. The FBI is not getting involved for half a million.
No.
And that's a guy.
And that guy already got caught.
Huh.
And the French horn, the French horn player will stick his fist up in there to control the pitch into the bell in varying degrees.
Oh.
I don't know.
They always had their hand in there.
It's called hand stopping.
I thought the French horn sounded beautiful.
To adjust intonation while playing. Mm.
Dave, it's not as interesting as Andrew's FBI SWAT story.
No, it really is not. I had forgotten all about it. Then I saw the tab was still open on my browser. Oh. All right, let's close that and let's open this.
The library is officially open.
It's time for some
book reviews.
Well, let's start with
Laura Medicus.
One more girl on stage.
Laura, what do you got for us this week?
All right. So I'm closing the year out. I thought I would close the year out with kind of a resolution kind of book, like a self-improvement.
Tis the season.
Tis the season.
That would be like the beginning of a new year would be the season for that.
Yeah, but we're almost there.
We're almost there.
Yeah. Okay. I think at the end of the old year, you start thinking about like, what do I hope for?
Reflect upon the old year.
Yeah, I'm more of a looker forward than a reflector. I'm looking forward at like, what can I do differently? What can I do better? What should I change? Like, stuff like that. So I am recommending this book. It's called, kind of got a hokey title, and I feel a little embarrassed saying it. The book is not hokey. It's called Build the Life You Want, The Art and Science of Getting Happier.
Now we share the same library app. So when I saw that you had checked this book out, I'm like, okay.
I know.
What's going on here?
So this is
should I be worried?
No. This is by Arthur Brooks and Oprah Winfrey. And I thought, if it's good enough for Oprah, then it's good enough for me. So I decided to read it. And also I saw that it's on Goodreads Best Nonfiction for this past year. Oh. So I thought, people like it. Let me check this book out. I don't read a lot of self-improvement. Might surprise you, Andrew. Just kidding.
Yeah.
So I just don't. I loved this book. I got a lot out of it personally. It's a short book. I enjoyed the stories. There's a lot of stories of real people. There's scientific studies that this author brings to the table.
Is this the book you kept quoting to me?
No, that's a different book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Oprah has a short essay in between chapters about her own personal experiences. If you're an Oprah fan, you might enjoy. If you're not, maybe skip it. So we're human beings, we're living in just this imperfect, chaotic, violent FBI SWAT teams going to your neighbor's homes.
Right.
We're obviously never going to be completely happy, right? Mm-hmm. It should be obvious to all of us that that's not possible, but we can work on getting happier.
Happier.
Yeah. So at the start of this book, the author tells you happiness is not the goal and also that unhappiness is not the enemy. So don't be afraid of unhappiness because it will find you no matter what you do. And that's okay. So I liked that immediately. I like a realistic approach. It appeals to me. And this book's very realistic throughout and there's nothing like woo-woo, like, if you believe in this, this will happen. Like there's none of that. So one thing I found really interesting is that, I didn't know this, is that being optimistic or pessimistic by nature is partly genetic. And I had no idea. I thought that we kind of shaped the way we saw things, but we don't. A lot of it's inherited. So that was kind of interesting. And there's some really cool studies in here about how highly optimistic people are, how they interact in the world, how if they're successful, how they approach things versus your kind of intermediate and then your pessimistic folks. I really enjoyed that. There's all kinds of studies about highly optimistic people and all of that. It's interesting. So there's just great studies here on longevity, people's attitudes towards life, pessimism, hope. Also, hope's really important to us as humans. Like, if you don't have it, it's hard to move forward.
Like the Hope Diamond.
Exactly, Dave. Yep, friendships, and then also your own unique nature. I'm more pessimistic by nature, and that's okay too. You guys need me just as much as you need the optimists.
Well,
I prefer to call it realistic.
Sure. There's the balance. If everybody was optimistic, what kind of world would this be?
What kind of world? Some of us got to bring the rest of you down.
That's right.
So I also really enjoyed the studies Arthur Brooks shares about how important friendships are as we get older, how important finding meaningful work is, and the importance for searching for meaning in life, whether it's through faith or through other philosophies on life, you know, or both. There's also quite a bit in here about emotional self-regulation that I really liked. I kind of liked thinking about that, you know, you and I, we're all one person out of 8 billion people
right.
in the world. And I think when you think of yourself in context of such an enormous scale, it helps put your own life in perspective.
Or it freaks you the hell out. Yeah.
Oh, really? I find it comforting.
I find it freaks me out when I start thinking about that.
I find it incredibly comforting. Mm-hmm. What about you, Andrew? 1 in 8 billion?
Just a speck on the beach.
I mean, I
find it comforting.
Yeah, I'm just pragmatic.
Oh, yeah.
But what does that mean?
I don't know.
I'm just kind of even keeled if things are going well. I mean, there could be planes flying around me, and I'll just be, okay.
The FBI's raiding the house across the street. Uh-huh. The feathers aren't getting ruffled. That's really funny. So I just really liked the 1 in 8 billion. And anxiety, worry, and sadness, you know, it's just all, they're normal. They're completely normal. And a lot of them are useful in some sort of way.
So is Dave going to have to start sleeping on the couch?
How come?
Just because, you know, is that like the happiness of sleeping in right, separate beds? Well, I'm just
trying to... There's none of that.
Yeah. Okay, good.
There's none of that.
Well, we got a nice big king size bed.
I find it comforting to have you next to me. Okay, or when you're not here, I bring Nelson in.
You do. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
So it's funny.
Because I'm scared. I get scared.
Yeah. I go on trips. And it's funny. I come back and Kitty's like, I did not sleep. You know? And I'd say for the most part, I snore like a freight train.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But you know,
so she's
like
used to
a white
it.
Noise that, machine for her.
That's what she's used
to. She's used to
that's
it.
What she's used to.
You need, next time you go away, you just need to record yourself, put it on a loop.
Have like a snoring machine. Yeah.
Yeah. I like having another body in that room, like Nelson or you. I like knowing like I'm not alone in there. Yeah. So this, like I said, it's on the short reads for favorite nonfiction on Goodreads. There is some hate that is bringing the stars on this book down.
Oh, is
so
that the Oprah, the backlash,
I looked,
probably?
There's a lot of one-star reviews, and every one-star review mentioned their hate for Oprah.
Yeah,
and I
ridiculous.
Gotta say,
that's ridiculous.
Some people just can't handle a successful woman.
That is
absolutely my thought.
True. No,
she
a
didn't
successful
start
black woman at that.
I know, and she didn't start as a successful person.
No, remember she was on with Richard Scherer in Baltimore.
Yeah, but I mean, she had a very poor upbringing.
She did.
Yep.
It's not like she was like Elon Musk who inherited, like she's not somebody who, she's a bootstrapper, like Andrew likes to say.
She created her brand.
She did. Yeah, I know she had a lot of help getting there.
Wait, Gail? Yep.
Well, her husband, Stedman. I know she's had a lot of help. Like we don't.
Is Stedman still?
She talks about Stedman.
Really?
Yes, I found it kind of interesting.
Wow.
Yes.
I'd like to know more about this Stedman guy.
You'll have to read it.
I might have to read it. It does sound good.
I'm going to say, I really enjoyed the book. There's not a lot of Oprah in here. So if you're not like super excited about Oprah, I'm not like super excited. I like her. I admire her. But I'm not like, I never watched the Oprah show.
No, you're not
like
a fanatic.
But I still really enjoyed this book. So it's not like Oprah being super Oprah.
You were always more of a Donahue fan.
Phil
Donahue.
Phil. Who was I?
My mom went and saw Donahue once.
Jerry Springer.
I didn't watch any of those. You know who I liked was...
Maury Povich.
Not Carol Burnett, but Vicky.
Oh, Vicky. Yeah,
I
Vicky
liked
Lawrence.
Her talk show.
She had a talk show, yeah.
I liked Vicky Lawrence's talk show.
Ricky Lake.
I watched some Ricky Lake.
Dr. Oz.
Didn't watch that one.
Dr. Phil.
Who's the comedian? Short hair.
Rosie O'Donnell. Now, we used to watch
Rosie. Oh, I liked
Rosie
O'Donnell. Yeah. Yeah.
That was more
I liked Regis and Kelly.
Show. Regis and Kelly.
Yeah.
No, the other one, she's kind of like a comedian.
Ellen
DeGeneres. Oh, I like Ellen. Yeah.
Ellen was great. Fantastic.
There's a lot of those. You're right. I'm not immune to daytime TV.
No. But, yeah. Give me, take David.
So Lillian. If you're looking for, you know, a thought-provoking... little starter book to get you thinking about maybe some changes you want to make on yourself for the next year in your life or searching for a new job, things like that. I loved it. It's called Build the Life You Want, The Art and Science of Getting Happier.
All right. Very good. And that's recommended by
Laura Medicus
in my book this week.
Dave Medicus.
Get me drinking that moonshine. Get me higher than the grocery.
To wrap up 2023, I've got another David Joy book. This one is called Those We Thought We Knew. I love this author. I've recommended him several times on the show. It is just a beautifully written and emotionally taught mystery thriller from David Joy, set in a small town. And, you know, he writes about Appalachian life. And this one is set in a small town in North Carolina. And coming back to this small town is a young woman named Toya Gardner. She is a black artist located in Atlanta, was coming back to her hometown to spend the summer with her grandmother and learn more about her family history while finishing up her graduate thesis, which involves her family history. But it is the Confederate statue in the town square that has really got her thinking. Not to mention the local college, who relocated a black church and actually dug up and moved coffins to make room for a new student dorm. So Toya, not wanting to just leave things standing still, arranges a couple of protests where she dug up, quote, graves on the campus and decorated them with white stones, for which she was arrested by the white sheriff, who was coincidentally an old family friend. And she dumped red paint on the Confederate statue, for which she was also arrested. Now, this is a town on the brink, and Toya's anger are the match point that pushes this town toward a confrontation. It is a story of generational trauma.
Timely.
Very timely. Generational trauma, as we find out through some of the older people of the town, including Toya's grandmother, exactly how they have been treated in this town and the way that the town has treated them. While all this is going on, the sheriff's deputies discover a man sleeping in his car and find, when they search the car, because the guy was drunk, they find a Klan uniform in the car along with a list of names. I mean, this is just, I can't stress how much this is a must-read story.
What state is this in?
North Carolina. Okay. Which I think is where the author's from. I think all his books are set here. David Joy brings to light the questions and issues that arose out of the Black Lives Matter movement, the Civil Rights movement, issues that people still need to hear about, stories that just need to be told. A beautiful book. Extremely timely, as you said, and better get it, as I read someone on Goodreads pointed out, get your hands on it now before some Southern governor bans it and continues to ban you know, books like these. But really a great story, an entertaining read, and you know, a tough one, a very tough one at times, because there are no easy answers. But this is something that needs to be discussed.
So this is... is this historical fiction, or
it is
or?
Not? Is no, it's. I mean, you might. It's not based on a true incident. Well, no, it is. I mean, yes, basically, it's not based on a true. But it is. I mean, you see people, the statues, the issue of the statues. People say, well, and there's an incredible passage in the book where they're talking about the name of a certain road, and people all throughout the history of the town, they always called it this word. I think you can guess what word I'm talking about. They called it that word road. And everyone's like, well, what? Why can't believe they changed the name of it? Who? How could you? It's just, it didn't mean anything. That's just, but that's what they think. These things don't mean anything because that's the way it's always been.
Sure. To white people, they might
to
not.
To white people. Yeah. Exactly. But that so means a lot.
I bet you the book's already banned.
I'm sure.
So,
I'm sure.
So look it up. It's probably already banned a few places. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
Yep, but a good read. Those We Thought
Florida.
We Knew.
I'll say it.
Yeah, Florida. Florida. By David Joy. Andrew
Dowd. Ever
after. So I was ready to review this last week. Did not get the opportunity.
Yeah, Andrew somehow did not get... he got the memo that were going to do our favorite books of the year.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that.
But
he showed up super prepared.
You know, there's something about...
he's an A student.
Not living in the same house with Dave and Laura, where I just don't get all the conversations.
Fair enough.
I understand.
So, the book is called A Healer's Way. It is written by two authors, Alexei Kovtunov and Oleg Sapphire. And, you know, Now, you read this book, A Healer's Way, and you're thinking, oh, you know, this is a book about a healer or something like that. And so this is a fantasy novel. And I would say it is a cross between Robin Hood and Dracula, right? I mean, this is not some fuzzy, warm healer. I mean, you know, and I'll talk a little bit about the premise of the book, you know, in terms of where it is.
Got some vampires in there?
Well, not vampires, but we'll get there.
Okay.
So anyways, so the healer, he doesn't really like give his name. And maybe the name isn't really all that important because he ends up assuming somebody else's identity. And so the healer is on some alternate world where magic is very strong and healers are can be very strong magicians. Well, he bills himself as the strongest healer, an archmage, on the entire world. On this world, he is like the strongest magician. He is the strongest healer. Now, his brother is a king. And this healer has absolutely no desire to take over his brother's kingdom. But of course, his brother doesn't believe that. And so he ends up arresting and imprisoning his brother, the healer. And I will say, like, as powerful as he is, I don't know, like, why he didn't escape. But I guess they had some means of keeping him there. And so he realizes, he's like, well, I'm done on this world. You know, I need to move on. And so he creates portal magic, and he ends up taking his soul and his essence, and he ends up transferring himself to another world. And he ends up transferring himself into the body of a prisoner who maybe has days left to live, right? So here he is. He goes from, you know, the frying pan into the fire. And so he's in this prison, but he is, you know, and the story unfolds. You don't really know who he is as a healer. Like, he doesn't talk about his abilities. Like, he identifies himself, but you don't know anything about him. But you really only discover about him as the story unfolds after he's made this transition. And so, and you quickly learn that he has the ability to basically, you know, steal life force to make himself stronger, right? And so as he's in this prison, you have these sadistic guards, and I mean, and basically they will beat people. There's nothing they won't do, right? It is a brutal prison. They treat the prisoners like, you know, worse than animals. And so basically he gets to get a little bit of revenge on them, or maybe a lot of revenge.
Yeah.
And so he can suck the life force out of them.
Wow.
Now, if, you know, as far as what happens is he meets another prisoner there who's on his last legs, and basically, he makes a deal with him, and he says, look, I will give you everything I have left in me, energy-wise. You can have my memories. You can have everything. But will you save my daughter? And so, and that's where I come into this, is the healer is brutal. But he's brutal when people are corrupt, when they are mean, when they are deserving of punishment. He is brutal. He is unforgiving. But he will take a child on the street that doesn't have money to eat, and he will basically give them money to eat. So he's not indiscriminate in terms of his like, you know, brutal vengeance or righteous vengeance. You know, and that's what I say. He's kind of like Robin Hood meets Dracula, in terms of who he does. So he basically, I would say he has two missions, maybe three. One mission is, he continues to get stronger. Like, his body in this new world is not as strong as his body in his old world. So part of it is he wants to continue to grow stronger, right? Physically, mentally, the magic, he wants to continue to grow stronger. But he has also accepted this mission to basically save this, and I don't know if it's I can't think of the name of the type of royalty, if it was like a baron or something like that, save his daughter. And so he also takes that on. So that's another mission that he has. And the other one is to learn more about the world. Now, the world he left was sort of like a medieval world with lots of magic, no real technology. But the world that he's arrived in is almost like, sort of like modern day Earth. And it probably is Earth, but he's arrived in like Russia. So he's in Russia, where, you know, I mean, there may or may not be a little bit of corruption in Russia, but that is where he arrives, right? And so you see references stuff, but there's technology, there's cars, there's cell phones, right? But there aren't really magicians. Like, there's magic, just not strong magic. And so he basically, you know, he can do a lot because, you know, our world, and I guess we can kind of, it's sort of like our world, you know, doesn't have regular magic. And it's kind of cool where they introduce magic into a world that, I mean, it could be our world, mm-hmm. As far as that goes. And so the place this book has, it builds up. I mean, you get to, you know, and I've talked about like the bootstrap genre, and mm-hmm. this is sort of a type of a bootstrap genre. And so,
you just call this the Oprah Winfrey genre from now on.
Yeah. What? I don't quite get that.
She bootstrapped her
career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could say that, but I would say, yeah. I mean, Oprah's sort of a bootstrap. She is sort of a bootstrap person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think she would take offense at that at all.
No.
So. So, as far as this book, where this book you know takes you, it takes you to the point where he's capable. You know, he has a foundation now. Like, this book ends just as he's really starting to get to the point where he can approach his goals, right? But, and so, it's, you know, if you're looking for a nice Christmas read, escapism, if you're looking for some righteous vengeance.
Mm,
if
who
you,
isn't?
If you want to see the life literally get sucked out of a bunch of bad people, then this book is for you. But it's called A Healer's Way by Alexei Kovtunov and Oleg Sapphire. I suggest you look up Oleg Sapphire first.
Really?
Well, just because it's a lot easier to spell.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, yeah, and then Alexei Kovnutov.
Kovtunov.
Kovtunov. Kovtunov.
And I don't know how many stars or whatever this has in Goodreads, but I would think
4.34. Yeah. Very high rating.
Yeah.
Very high rating. People are enjoying it. And Andrew is bringing it to us. All right.
Oh.
Which means it's time for the
Audiobook
of the week, and boy, let me tell you, I got a fun one for you. And this one is for all people out there who are fans, and who isn't? Or I'm looking at someone across the room from me who actually is not. Who isn't a fan? Andrew, you're a fan of the movie Airplane, am I right?
Oh, no, absolutely. Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
This might be someone on the other side of the room.
You're not a fan?
No, never cared for it. I know it's very popular. Sorry.
So now,
send the letters to Laura Medicus.
Now, who's one of the main characters in Airplane? What's his name? Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen, yeah.
So, you know, I watched a movie, and I think it's Forbidden Planet, which starred a young Leslie Nielsen.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And look it up. Look up Leslie.
Well, you don't have to look it up. I can just tell you about it because I just listened to. Let me get to the book.
Okay.
Oh, all right. Called,
all right. All right. And I'll tell you all about Leslie Nielsen.
Some people need to read a book. Okay, some people have lived it.
Look it up. Surely he didn't. Anybody points at you. Look it up. He's got a phone right there.
I didn't know what the G car was. Oh, no, and or I was whatever.
Because like,
yeah. I'll tell you about Leslie Nielsen.
Because when we get used to seeing Leslie Nielsen on Airplane, he's this old gray-haired guy.
I'll get to it.
Okay.
So this book is called, and I'd like to hear the movie that you stumbled across. That would be funny. This is called Surely You Can't Be Serious, The True Story of Airplane, and it is written by the directors of the movie, David Zucker, Jim Abrams, and Jerry Zucker, and it's read by the authors, as well as Laura Orico and Joe Prano. And all throughout, you have real-life celebrities who lend their voices to their quotes, because you've got people like famous comedians who talk about how much this movie meant to them and their first experiences with the movie. Patton Oswalt, Molly Shannon, Sarah Silverman, Bill Hader, and Andrew, your favorite, Weird Al Yankovic, also pops onto the audiobook at a certain point. And this one tells the story of the making of the movie. It tells the story of how the movie came about and the rise of these three guys, David Zucker, Jim Abrams, and Jerry Zucker, two brothers and their friend who were college students at the University of Wisconsin, started the Kentucky Fried Theater, and then packed up all their stuff and moved to Hollywood with the dreams of one day making this movie Airplane. And how it came about is they were watching a movie one night, and the name of the movie is Zero Hour. So this movie is Zero Hour. So what it is an old black and white B movie and it's like an airplane disaster movie. And it turns out they basically like literally rewrote the movie and just threw in a bunch of gags. And they rewrote so much of the movie that when they showed it to someone else in Hollywood, the guy was like, "You got to buy the rights to this movie. You can't just use all this dialogue." But they love the hard hitting dialogue. And, you know, this is what 0 Hour is, one of those movies that they say is unintentionally hilarious when Airplane is intentionally.
Now, what
hilarious.
Year did 0 Hour come out?
It must have come out sometime in the 70s. Hmm. So they saw what their vision was to take all these actors from Peter Graves, Robert Stack, and who was Elliot Ness. Robert Stack was the first guy they wanted. They wanted Elliot Ness, who was on what was the show that he was on?
Dragnet?
No, not Dragnet.
Untouchables?
Yeah, The Untouchables. So Robert Stack and Lloyd Bridges and Peter Graves, and they wanted all these, and they went after George Kennedy as well. They wanted all these old school actors, but they wanted them to play this movie straight. That was their vision. Mm. Like, they wanted to film a comedy with people playing their roles straight, and then they would throw the jokes in. But a lot of these actors, when they got hired, it's just a fascinating story about how they had to fight to direct it for themselves. How every studio was said, "Well, you're making comedies. We need to get Dom DeLuise to be in this movie. Why don't you want?" Nobody understood why they wanted serious actors to play in this comedy, because it was not something that had ever been done before. But they had their vision. They stuck to it, and it's really ultimately it's a heartwarming story. Of three guys who had a vision, stuck to that vision, didn't sell out. They could have sold the script, could have had other people direct it, but they stuck to their vision. And it was Michael Eisner who actually was the first studio exec who got the concept and said this could work. The only thing he changed was the boys wanted to film it in black and white. He's like, "No, we can't do
Thank goodness they didn't win that.
They would have colorized it anyway.
Yeah,
it wouldn't matter.
But there's
all kinds of little tidbits about the making of it and all the background stuff. One of the fun things where they talk about that airplane design, the cover poster, like that came out of nowhere. Just a really fun read.
You know, if we didn't have movies like Airplane, we wouldn't have shows like Reno 911. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but
I don't know.
You know.
I didn't know one of the, it might have been Jimmy Kimmel in this one who said, "Nobody did it as good, did this kind of humor as good as the Zucker Brothers and Jim Abrams, and nobody has done it since." Hmm. So, I mean, you look at all the Naked Gun movies, Top Secret, and then they split up, and then, of course, David Zucker did Ghost, but they've had a lot of success in the business. And it's just a great, great, very entertaining read. If you're a fan of the movie,
I mean, I think most people are. A lot of people like it.
This is an absolute must read. Highly entertaining. Just so much fun. One funny, and I listened. My mom was here, I said, "Let's listen to." I got this great audiobook, and we were driving down to Chatfield State Park. I put it on, and I started playing it, and she goes, "Hold on, stop it." I hit pause. I'm like, "What? What is it?" She's like, "Is that Speeded Up?" I said, I listened to it at 1.5 speed. She's like, "I can't. You need to take it down to single speed." So
yeah,
I did do that. But anyway, let's take a listen to a clip. This is Surely You Can't Be Serious, the true story of Airplane.
By the summer of 1980, we'd been working on Airplane for the better part of 5 years. Finally, in early July, it was finished and ready for release. The night arrived. The premiere was on the lot at Paramount Studios. Three Midwestern boys' Hollywood fantasy come true.
The lights went down. The movie started. In those days, films were projected from reels. Airplane was on 5 reels. Up in the booth, the projectionist put up the reels. 1, 2, 3, 5. The guy skipped reel 4.
Clearly a disaster, but I remember we had 3 completely different reactions to it.
Audiobook of the week.
All right, there you go. Check that one out. Such a good listen. Really, really loved it. That'll do it for us this year. Thank you so much for sticking around and listening to us. We really appreciate it. We appreciate you. So go out there and spread the word. Spread the word. Let a friend know. Tell a friend if you know a friend who likes books, is in the books. Let them know about the podcast. And we'll be back in 2024.
Wow, 2024.
2024 with some good guests and some great shows and some great books. Until then, see ya.
Adios.
Excelsior.
I'm drained. I'm just drained.